This is Ozarks at Large. The history of the Negro baseball leagues is well documented. When Major League Baseball was segregated, some of the best baseball players ever, like Cool Papa Bell, Josh Gibson, and Satchel Paige, played for teams like the Kansas City Monarchs and the Homestead Grays. Books, documentaries, and the well worth your time Negro Leagues Baseball Museum in Kansas City tell the story. The history of football teams and leagues of all black players is less documented. This part of the world had a successful, vibrant league of football teams of African-American players, and sports historian and writer Evan DeMorel devotes a chapter to those teams in his upcoming book, African-American Athletes in Arkansas, Muhammad Ali's Tour, Black Razorbacks, and Other Forgotten Stories. One such football team often scrimmaged against the Fayetteville High School football Bulldogs when not playing other teams from Fort Smith, Joplin, or Carthage, Missouri. Evan says this team had a familiar-sounding name.
They anecdotally went by the Black Razorbacks. One reason is because they were getting hand-me-downs not only from the Bulldogs, but from the Razorbacks themselves, according to Friedman. They were wearing old Razorback jerseys from the white Razorbacks. Moreover, the then head coach of the Razorbacks, a man named Fred Thompson from Nebraska, was coaching them on the side.
Really?
I kid you not.
Now, Fayetteville has never been a community that had a large African-American presence. I mean, it's been a predominantly white town, but there were enough African-Americans here that were athletic enough to form a team?
At least two teams, potentially two teams.
Wow.
According
to
Friedman, there was a second team, and in the 1920s is when the whites and the blacks started playing each other. And these are guys who lived in the same neighborhood in South Fayetteville. This is just on the streets, you know, kind of very informal scrimmaging. And then that kind of developed into these scrimmages where they would play against the white Bulldogs, again, kind of by where the Union is now on the University of Arkansas campus.
Yes.
That's where the old field house was decades ago, as well as off Willow Street in the hollow kind of east of where the courthouse is now down in the valley. So, yes, they were competing. They were regularly trouncing each other, according to Friedman. When they played on the U of A campus, the African Americans would get soundly destroyed. And then when they played in the African American community, Friedman recalls the quote "black maidens" unquote cheering the boys on, and the whites getting trounced in that setting.
Do we know, was it an interracial audience that would watch the games?
Very good question. I'm going to speculate there had to have been significant white fans beyond Friedman. There had to have been significant white interest because the game reports are being printed in all white-owned newspapers. There was no African-American newspaper.
What do we know about the teams from Fort Smith, from Joplin, from Carthage? Is there as much coverage or academic research on them?
I have not yet found record of them in the newspapers out of those places, although they very well exist. In the newspapers from here, they do mention names of the players from Carthage, Joplin. One of the interesting things is there's one player out of Russellville whose last name is Williamson. And very
Williamson, Russellville?
Williamson, Russellville. It looks like this is a relative, potentially like a grandfather of Corliss Williamson himself, one of the most famous African-American Razorbacks.
It'd be interesting to try to get hold of him and see if he ever heard family stories about.
I'm looking into that.
I'm sure you are. So Fred Thompson was the official coach of the University of Arkansas Razorback football team that's in the Southwest Conference. He's coaching this other team of African-Americans on the side.
On the side, kind of like
this well-known?
No, it had to be.
No, it wasn't.
Well, it was known to Friedman, who, of course, tells us. Otherwise, as far as I know, there's no mention of this in public records anywhere else.
But would he show up as their coach on the sideline at the games?
He would. The reason Friedman tells us that he's showing up at their scrimmages, and I think I'm speculating this is why he's coaching the black players on the side, is so that he can, he's scouting the white Bulldogs for the future Razorbacks.
Okay,
and I think
okay.
it would be in his best interest to have good, quote, sparring partners for these white Razorbacks. Another thing I think to consider is both he and his predecessor at head coach were both from the Plain States. So he's from Nebraska, a place which did have kind of Jim Crow laws, but more of a not as hardcore as what you saw in the South, to the point where in 1891, the Cornhuskers had an African-American star on their team who was voted as their captain of the Cornhuskers. So that's the kind of culture he was in, although by the 20s and 30s, they were barring blacks as well.
Have you found that there were any people who didn't want white and black athletes on the same field at a time?
It looks like it. There's one anecdote that the facts play out like this. In 1925, the white Fayetteville Bulldogs started playing on Harmon Field, where they still play. Mm-hmm. Harmon Field is named Harmon Field because it received grants from a man named William Harmon, who was one of the nation's most renowned benefactors of the African-American arts, based out of New York City. He had a philanthropy which funded many different playgrounds, some for specifically for African-American children across the nation, including this playground. He gave funds to Fayetteville's playground. However, at some point around 1930, according to Friedman, he says, quote, someone came up with the claim that the deed donating the area to the city of Fayetteville for recreational purposes stipulated that Negroes are never allowed to be use the facilities. End quote. It looks like this was someone just making up a ruse to get them off the field, even though the facts say that was highly, highly unlikely, given William Harmon, son of a Buffalo soldier, commander, was the man who funded these in the first place.
You discussed this at a event at Shiloh Museum of Ozark History.
I did. The Washington County Historical Society invited me to come and discuss that.
I've been to some of these discussions at Shiloh Museum, and it attracts people who know a lot about this area.
Mm-hmm.
What was the reaction? Were there a lot of people who said, wait, what? I've never heard about this?
Yes. There were a lot of those people. However, one of the things I actually learned on the spot at that event was there, you know, thanks to a couple other presenters, Sandra Cox and Eric Johnson, I learned that there had been, preceding the 1930s, a significant musical scene in Fayetteville where you had all black bands that drew all white crowds, mixed crowds, to support those bands. Additionally, you had, emerging a little later, white and black bands in this area. So there was a precedent, even on the musical side of things, for this kind of white support or biracial support of these black entertainment groups. I think the world can join even more when we learn a guy like Buddy Hayes, who was probably very well known on the music side in Fayetteville's history, was a black Razorback as well. He did play little sports,
really?
Even though he was no good. This is what I've been told. He did try it out. And there's another guy, Otis Parker, who also played with this team.
You know, football in the 20s and 30s was far more dangerous. Not that it's a walk in the park now.
Right.
I mean, we have the whole concussion issue to be studied further, of course. But the equipment and the style of play in the first quarter or first third of the last century,
yes,
you had people really getting hurt. Any sort of report about were there serious injuries? I mean, you're playing with, and if they're playing with, you know, hand-me-down equipment.
Right. No, there are. One of the things that Friedman recalls is, and it was actually happening to the White Bulldogs, but he said the reason he quit playing football was because a guy named Sandy York of the Black Razorbacks cracked three of the bones on his left rib on a tackle. Mm-hmm. And then he just talks about a Fayetteville High starting fullback named Ray Hinkle, who was sidelined for two playoff games because of a bruised shoulder he sustained while scrimmaging these Razorbacks, Black Razorbacks, on a Sunday afternoon. Hinkle's coach never knew the reason.
Do we have photos? Do we have logos? Do we have images of these teams?
We unfortunately do not, as far as I know yet. I'm looking for some. I do have a photo of a man named Langston Parks. He was one of at least three Black Razorbacks who are from Bentonville, which at that point had a small African-American community, come down and play in Fayetteville. Here's a guy who ends up moving to Iowa in the mid-30s, plays for a college, I think Parsons College up there. We do have a photo of him from that college, circa 1936, so that's kind of the only circa 30s photo I have of any of these guys. He's interesting in himself because he goes on to coach as a black coach an all-white basketball team up there.
It's interesting how something like this, covered by the newspaper, not a secret at the time, and somewhere, and this isn't the only thing that, you know, six, seven decades ago stopped and we've forgotten about, but it just sort of the dustbins of history. I mean, you'd think it's somewhere along the line we would have kept this alive, but.
Yeah, a guy like Friedman tried to, you know, with his article, but.
And of course, it brings up, we don't like to think of our segregated past all the time.
No.
So maybe, you know, there's a consciousness that, like, let's not talk about when we wouldn't let white young men and black young men be on the same team.
That's true. I think there's also the idea of the who are the there's almost like this layer of pioneerdom that wasn't officially there yet. They weren't official Razorbacks, but a lot of these guys worked on the U of A campus. They worked at fraternity houses. They knew the white Razorbacks, not only the ones who were Bulldogs and became white Razorbacks, but they saw them on campus and they talked to them. And so there's this I think this sense of community, at least in Fayetteville. I don't know about other towns around the South, but there's this sense of community that just simply has been totally mostly forgotten. Even in the books that specifically delve into race and sports history, even those don't touch this.
Boy, wouldn't it be nice? I know what you're going to say. Wouldn't it be great if someone had taken a Brownie film camera or a Kodak or something, and it's in some attic or something somewhere? It just seems a shame that these black Razorbacks and these other teams have no visual stamp.
As far as we know, none yet. It is possible that the photos were taken because people thought they were important enough to cover in newspapers. So it's very possible some photos exist out there. Wouldn't it be nice if somehow someone found them?
Evan DeMorel is the author of the forthcoming book, African American Athletes in Arkansas, Muhammad Ali's Tour, Black Razorbacks, and Other Forgotten Stories. The book will be released in April. A chapter in that book is devoted to the Black Razorbacks. You can find out more or maybe provide one of those elusive photos by emailing him at evandemorel@gmail.com. He spells his last name D-E-M-I-R-E-L, evandemorel@gmail.com.